Hello and welcome to this continuing exploration, these continuing chess pieces, these pieces of A Game at Chess. See what we did there. As we continue our journey into the question of adaptation, the question of what to do with a text which has some interesting structural issues. We've been mostly wrestling with the question of exposition, of how the play doesn't tell you exactly what's going on for a while and lets a scene play out and then explains what was going on more clearly later on. That issue is now much less as we are much further into the text, and this session we're going to be looking at several bits of scenes towards the end of the play, going from Act 3, Scene 1, and then dancing through any scenes with the White Queen's Pawn. This is actually going to be the compilation of all the White Queen's Pawn material, or almost all of it, from now to the end of the play. Excluding any big scenes where lots and lots of people are involved, because we have something of a very strange chamber piece going on now in the text. And so there's an element of asking as much about adaptation, but also, you know, what's going on with characters. And there are a few interesting questions about how we depict in audio specifically what's going on, but I think most of the time it's quite straightforward and easy to do. And of course we have narrators we can dip into if we want to. We can create some narration because we have two narrator characters from the beginning of the play. But for those wanting to know where we are, we've just followed the scene where the White Queen's Pawn has been vindicated, and effectively the Black Queen's Pawn has been used as a scapegoat for that process of vindication, by which point all the men get away scot-free, and the women have been left to carry the can, both previously unjustly and now additionally sort of unjustly, but only just unjustly. To read on as we go into a new gambit involving the White Queen's Pawn and the Black Queen's Pawn, we still haven't found a name for either of these characters. Maybe one day we will. Maybe we will have a series of christenings. But reading the White Queen's Pawn today is...
Liza Graham, jack of all trades, master of sod all, London.
Reading the Black Queen's Pawn today is...
Lindsay Beecham, actor, living in Scotland.
Reading the Black Bishop's Pawn is...
Hi, I'm Greg, and looking forward to more manoeuvring around the board.
And reading the Black Knight's Pawn and the White Bishop's Pawn is...
Hi, this is Tom from Brighton.
And I'm your host, Robert Crichton. I will briefly read the White Queen, said Alice. And that is coming up later on when we have slightly too many parts for the usual set of readers. But anyway, we're going to dive into the tail end of Act 3, Scene 1. We're going to get a sense of where we are. We've just had... all the white and the black houses have cleared the stage, leaving the White Queen's Pawn and the Black Queen's Pawn alone. And we'll see where we go. Take it away.
I sue to thee. Prithee, be one of us. Let my love win thee. Thou hast done truth this day, and yesterday mine honour noble service. The best pawn of our house could not transcend it.
My pity flamed with zeal, especially when I foresaw your marriage. Then it mounted.
How? Marriage?
That contaminating act would have spoiled all your fortunes. A rape. God bless us.
Thou talk'st of marriage?
Yes, yes, you do marry. I saw the man.
The man?
An absolute handsome gentleman, a complete one. You'll say so when you see him. Heir to 3 red hats, besides his general hopes in the Black House.
Why, sure, thou art much mistaken in this man. I've promised single life to all my affections.
Promise what you will, or all's one. There's a fate rules and overrules us all, methinks.
Why... how came you to see or know this mystery?
A magical glass I bought of an Egyptian, whose stone retains that speculative virtue, presented the man to me. Your name brings him as often as I use it, and methinks I never have enough. Person and postures all are so pleasing.
This is wondrous strange. The faculties of soul are still the same. I can feel no one motion tend that way.
We do not always feel the faith we live by, nor ever see our growth, yet both work upward.
'Twas well applied. But may I see him too?
Surely you may, without all doubt or fear, observing the right use as I was taught it, not looking back nor questioning the spectre.
That's no hard observation. Trust it with me. If possible, I long to see this man.
Pray, follow me then, and I'll ease you instantly.
And there, we're just going to pause as I just discover there's all sorts of interesting slight textual variations as to so much of this dialogue that I hadn't noticed in prep. So that's interesting. So this scene in some forms actually actively runs straight into the next scene. Sometimes it doesn't. And there are some very slight tweaks to some of the dialogue that occurs in there. So I hadn't appreciated that there are variations on that possibility. That there may or may not be a time break between the scene that you've just read and the action that you're about to read in a moment. So that's an interesting artistic question of choice. It's a shame to lose Act 2, Scene 2, because Act 3, Scene 2, because I quite like it. But I could understand why it's not automatically necessary.
Well, I'm guessing that maybe Act 3, Scene 3 is in the Discovery Chamber, if such there be.
That sort of logic, yes. It's another space, and potentially, you know, a little bit of time has passed, depending on, say, which version. There's some interesting, very minor textual tweaks as well that are there. So we're clearly following the slightly earlier version as our primary text here, as opposed to the later version that just goes straight on. So that's interesting. Well, maybe it doesn't. Maybe that's all thing. Yeah.
So what year is the first version?
Oh, they're all the same. They're all on top of each other. This is the thing. We just have several manuscript variations. So Game at Chess was a 9-day wonder. It was performed 9 days in a row because it was so controversial. And they knew it was going to get banned the moment the king noticed. And so they just kept going, which meant that an awful lot of copies were made, several manuscript copies, as well as the then later printed version that went out. It was a massive cause célèbre. So the earlier version, there is a mini scene between the scene we've just done and the scene we're about to do. And then in a later version, that scene has disappeared. And that might be more for a printed interpretation where the time jump is less important, or maybe that. I don't know if it had a actual continuing performance history after those 9 days. I wouldn't be surprised if it was never heard of again, because it was just such a big thing, because it was all so controversial at the time, because you have a personification of the king on stage, who we haven't actually done any work on so far. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Anyway, I've waffled on about minor textual changes, which I'm going to try and note in a moment. A couple of them are quite good. Just very minor things with repetition of seeing the man, because it changes the subject remarkably quickly. this Black Queen's pawn just immediately going, oh, you and your marriage. And the White Queen's pawn's just going, the marriage what now? It's such a quick turnaround from the White Queen's pawn saying, you've just had a terrible day. You've been denounced by your own house. Come and join us. We'd love you to be on our side. We're lovely white pawn pieces. You know, they'll be great. You can join me. And then Black Queen goes, immediately starts talking about marriage for reasons that will become clear. Yeah. Or have become clear. And we have magic stuff. Magical yeah. glass.
The magical glass reminded me very much of that that black mirror that's associated with Dr. D. Mm. But D dies in 1609-ish, which I think is 8 or 9, which I think is a lot earlier than this play, right?
Oh, yes, 1624 is this play.
So, I mean, who do we have? I know James is extremely anti-magic. He's... you know, Scottish Calvinist, writes the Malleus Maleficarum. Do we have anyone practicing magic at this point? Would the speculative glass be a reference to anyone in the especially associated with Egypt in the 1620s?
I would assume, I don't know, but I would assume it's because it's the Black Queen's pawn doing it, it's something that definitely wouldn't be happening in the English court. It would be something that the kind of trick that a foreign devil would perhaps be included.
So is there like a Catholic magician or charlatan?
I don't know.
Someone who's a big name that this would be a reference to? Or some probably Italian dude pretending to be an Egyptian and pretending
Egyptian
to be a prophet?
Well, Egyptian would be an analogue for gypsy as well. So it may not literally be an Egyptian in that sense. I don't think there's a specific reference for it. I think it's just following on the long tradition of various plays that I can't off the top of my head remember that feature someone doing this kind of magic. He does air quotes because that's great on a podcast. Other thoughts about this little this warming up? Because, as I say, you've been thrown into it. So we will literally read this scene again and run it straight into the next scene, because that seems like a logical thing to do. So that you can get your bearings a bit more. Lindsay?
My only thought is one I can't actually say, because it was only
good,
that it...
Good. Then if you're going where I think you're going, just veer off. Just veer off.
That's all right. I have nothing to say.
But you say it beautifully.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then, So, again, it's... Action-wise, it's all very straightforward. There's nothing here that's making me go, I don't think this is unclear. I think there just needs to be a certain amount of... the White Queen is as confused... Queen's pawn is as confused as anybody else is. So that's all perfectly logical and fine. Let's run this... let's go back to the... Actually, no, we won't. We'll go on. We'll go on from where we stopped. So you followed the Black Queen's pawn, and we're going into the next scene. We'll come back and maybe run this again and do that. We'll see. Okay. So Act 3, Scene 3, depending on which version you're looking at, they approach where the magical glass is kept.
This is the room he did appear to me in, and look you, this, the magical glass that showed him.
I find no motion yet. What should I think, Aunt? A sudden fear invades me, a faint trembling under this omen, as is oft felt the panting of a turtle under a stroking hand.
That bodes good luck still. Sign you shall change state speedily, for that trembling is always the first symptom of a bride. For any vainer fears that may accompany his apparition, by my truth to friendship, I quit you of the least. Never was object more gracefully presented. The very air conspires to do him honour, and creates sweet vocal sounds as if a bridegroom entered, which argues the blessed harmony of your loves.
And will the using of my name produce him?
Nay, of yours only, else the wonder halted. To clear you of that doubt, I'll put the difference in practice. The first thing I do, and make his invocation in the name of others.
'Twill satisfy me much, that.
It shall be done. Thou, whose gentle form and face filled lately this Egyptic glass, by the imperious, powerful name and the universal fame of the mighty Black House Queen, I conjure thee to be seen. What, see you nothing yet?
Not any part. Pray try another.
You shall have your will. I double my command and power, and at the instant of this hour, invoke thee in the White Queen's name. With stay for time and shape the same, what see you yet?
There's nothing shows at all.
My truth reflects the clearer then. Now, fix and bless your fair eye with your own for ever. Thou, well composed, by fate's hand drawn to enjoy the White Queen's pawn, of whom thou shalt by virtue met many graceful issues get, by the beauty of her fame, by the whiteness of her name, by her fair and fruitful love, by her truth that mates the dove, by the meekness of her mind, by the softness of her kind, by the lustre of her grace, by all these thou art summoned to this place. Hark how the air, enchanted with your praises and his approach, those words to sweet notes raises.
And there is music where the music comes in as a cue to be debated. At this point, enter the Black Bishop's pawn, who we've met before, richly attired like an apparition, and stands before the glass and then exits.
Oh, let him stay a while, a little longer.
That's a good hearing.
If he be mine, why should he part so soon?
Why, this is but the shadow of yours. How do you?
Oh, I did ill to give consent to see it. What certainty is in our blood or state? What we still write is blotted out by fate. Our wills are like a cause that is law-tossed. What one court orders is by another crossed.
I find no fit place for this passion here. 'Tis merely an intruder. He's a gentleman, most wishfully composed. Honour grows on him, and wealth piled up for him. Has youth enough, too. And yet in the sobriety of his countenance, grave as a tetrarch, which is gracious in the eye of modest pleasure. Where's the emptiness? What can you more request?
I do not know what answer yet to make. It doth require a meeting twixt my fear and my desire.
She's caught, and, which is strange, by her most wronger.
And they exit. So this is where the plot takes quite a disturbing twist. So within moments of the attempted assault by the Black Bishop's pawn is uncovered for being true. The Black Queen's pawn is trying to manipulate the White Queen's pawn into actually desiring the person who tried to assault her. Using magic, or the perception of magic. And here's an interesting question, how big the glass is, or how the glass is functions, because it's this thing, the stage direction stands before the glass, or stands behind.
So maybe it's a full-length sort of frame thing.
Yeah, or stands behind her so she sees the reflection in the glass, or sees, is it just a frame? And so he can just stand there and be seen, direct, you know, all sorts of interesting questions. And I say there's a music cue, which probably happens a couple of lines earlier. Hark, how the air enchanted with your praises. So that's probably where the music cue actually lives. And here's an interesting question, because, of course, all this in theory presumably has been prepared. You know, the stage management cues are going on here. And it's the Black Queen's pawn Does she do it three times? Because this is the rule of three here. Is that for build-up of suspense, or is it because the Black Bishop's pawn has missed his cue? You know, there's a question of... But of course, the audience hasn't really been primed to any of this. So there's a question of maybe you can't play that game because the audience isn't primed that this is a lie. We suspect it's a lie, but we don't necessarily actually know it's a lie yet. And why anything... Again, once again, we're not being told why anything's happening yet. Unless I've missed something, which is possible, which I'll find out next session that actually... Oh, no, there was a bit earlier that I missed. But yeah, this is a really messed up twist to the plot, by the way. It is severely messed up.
So the White Queen's pawn doesn't seem to recognize the Black Bishop's pawn from earlier. He's
wearing a different hat.
Well, he says it says like an richly attired like an apparition. So I guess he's in a different costume. Maybe he's masked. As you say, maybe he's wearing a hat and lit from above, so his face is in shadow, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, how does this kind of ruse work even in the short term? I mean, there's all sorts of questions. How do you disguise this guy for this gambit to even work for a minute, which it needs to because of where we're going next? So, yeah, there's all sorts of questions there. It's relatively straightforward to, again, audio-wise, perfectly straightforward because they pretty much describe what's going on most of the time. We might need to interpolate a few little additional expositions, but I don't think there's anything complicated there to do. I'd like to run that again, actually, from the top with just running the two scenes into each other to see how that flows, to see if that's a good thing or a bad thing. Or I suspect for audio, it's actually a really good thing because it keeps us in the moment. It doesn't mean we have to remind everyone who everyone is. But I could be wrong on that.
And do you want us to do all of the lines? I mean, the Black Queen's pawn has got a line at the end of the first section saying, "Pray follow me then and I'll ease you instantly." Which
well, you know, walking across the stage, opening a curtain.
Okay.
You know, it's coverable. I can understand why there was a scene in between in the earlier form. I think it's right that it's actually not necessary and not essential. Okay, let's run that again, see how it flows.
I sue to thee, prithee be one of us. Let my love win thee. Thou hast done truth this day and yesterday, mine honour noble service. The best pawn of our house could not transcend it.
My pity flamed with zeal, especially when I foresaw your marriage, and then it mounted.
How? Marriage?
That contaminating act would have spoiled all your fortunes. A rape, God bless us!
Thou talkst of marriage?
Yes, yes. You do marry. I saw the man.
The man?
An absolute handsome gentleman, a complete one. You'll say so when you see him. Heir to three red hats, besides his general hopes in the Black House.
Why, sure, thou art much mistaken in this man. I've promised single life to all my affections.
Promise what you will, or I, or all ons, there's a fate rules and overrules us all, methinks.
Why, how came you to see or know this mystery?
A magical glass I bought of an Egyptian, whose stone retains that speculative virtue, presented the man to me. Your name brings him, as often as I use it, and methinks I never have enough. Person and postures are all so pleasing.
This is wondrous strange. The faculties of soul are still the same. I can feel no one motion tend that way.
We do not always feel the faith we live by, nor ever see our growth, yet both work upward.
'Twas well applied, but may I see him too?
Surely you may, without all doubt or fear, observing the right use as I was taught it, not looking back nor questioning the spectre.
That's no hard observation. Trust it with me. Is possible. I long to see this man.
Well, pray follow me, then, and I'll ease you instantly. This is the room he did appear to me in, and look you, this, the magical glass that showed him.
I find no motion yet. What should I think on? A sudden fear invades me, a faint trembling under this omen, as is oft felt the panting of a turtle under a stroking hand.
That bodes good luck still, sign you shall change state speedily, for that trembling is always the first symptom of a bride. For any vainer fears that may accompany his apparition, by my truth to friendship, I quit you of the least. Never was object more gracefully presented. The very air conspires to do him honour and creates sweet vocal sounds as if a bridegroom entered, which argues the blessed harmony of your loves.
And will the using of my name produce him?
Nay, of yours only, else the wonder halted. To clear you of that doubt, I'll put the difference in practice. The first thing I do, and make his invocation in the name of others.
'Twill much satisfy me, that.
It shall be done. Thou, whose gentle form and face filled lately this Egyptic glass, by the imperious, powerful name and the universal fame of the mighty Black House Queen, I conjure thee to be seen. What, see you nothing yet?
Not any part. Pray try another.
You shall have your will. I double my command and power, and at the instant of this hour invoke thee in the White Queen's name, with stay for time and shape the same. What see you yet?
There's nothing shows at all.
My truth reflects the clearer then. Now fix and bless your fair eye with your own forever. Thou, well composed, by fate's hand drawn to enjoy the White Queen's pawn, of whom thou shalt, by virtue met, many graceful issues get. By the beauty of her fame, by the whiteness of her name, by her fair and fruitful love, by her truth that mates the dove, by the meekness of her mind, by the softness of her kind, by the lustre of her grace, by all these thou art summoned to this place. Hark, how the air, enchanted with your praises and his approach, these words to sweet notes raises.
Oh, let him stay a while, a little longer.
That's a good hearing.
If he be mine, why should he part so soon?
Why, this is but the shadow of yours. How do you?
Oh, I did ill to give consent to see it. What certainty is in our blood or state? What we still write is blotted out by fate. Our wills are like a cause that is law tossed. What one court orders is by another crossed.
I find no fit place for this passion here. 'Tis merely an intruder. He's a gentleman, most wishfully composed. Honour grows on him, and wealth piled up for him. Has youth enough, too. And yet, in the sobriety of his countenance, grave as a tetrarch, which is gracious in the eye of modest pleasure. Where's the emptiness? What can you more request?
I do not know what answer yet to make. It doth require a meeting twixt my fear and my desire.
She's caught, and which is strange by her most wronger.
Okay. It flows very well as a scene. There is, of course, there is a question of at what point do we reveal to an audio audience precisely who the wronger is? Do we leave it there and then explicate the most wronger the black bishop's pawn, you know, and put that data in there, or do we try and find a way of putting it in when she sees the apparition? There's also an interesting question of, you know, for a stage production, is there business while the AIM vacation is going on? It's like the White Queen's pawn is focused on the glass, while the Black Queen's pawn is going, get over there, get the hat on, put on the cloak, and while these various, and you know, there's an almost it's behind you thing where every time the White Queen's pawn looks around, he's dipped back behind a curtain or something. You know, there's questions there which are more, I'd say, a stagey question than an audio one. But yeah, do we need to explain who he is at that point, or do we just leave it till the end of the scene there? Because if he's in disguise, maybe on a stage, he's not supposed to be recognised. And it's up to the Black Queen's pawn to explicate. Lindsay?
I just wanted to make a quick and simple point that for an audio version, if some characters had, as it were, their kind of theme tune, there's already music in this scene. So if we've already heard the theme tune of this character in a previous scene, and then that theme is mixed in with the sort of heavenly airs and graces of the music that has been set up for the hoodwinking, that would reveal to the audience without necessarily revealing to the character. Possibly that could work.
Yeah, I like that. Sort of the Alfred Hitchcock Presents theme, you know.
Yeah.
Well, Lindsay's a screen goddess, and I'm an opera singer, so I think of it as a leitmotif. the music that is associated with the character. It's a device Wagner used. Wagner was a little shit in some ways, but this was an interesting development that he more or less pioneered.
Mm.
And which can be seen in almost every film score ever. Yes, Lindsay.
Yeah, no, Justin, also, it seems very well set up and well oiled and well rehearsed, this particular kind of ruse that's going on. So I didn't get the feeling from it of sort of like, quick, you're on. I didn't kind of get that feeling from it. I got the feeling that, you know, maybe this has been used in the past in order to dupe, you know, a fair young White Queen's pawn into you know, method one didn't work, so this is method two. So I have it just sort of feels more like, you know, they've got the stratagems and by God they're going to use them, sort of thing to me.
No, I like that. Yeah, and presumably, you know, there has been some conference. Of course, we don't know why you're doing this, and we can probably guess why the Black Knight, the Black Bishop's pawn, wants to do it. But yeah, there's all sorts of interesting questions there. Okay, we're gonna, however, move on to the next scene for the moment, unless anyone has any additional thoughts they want to throw in. We're gonna see what's going on with the Black Bishop's pawn, who's just quickly run around the corner to be in the next scene, as we're going to act four, scene one. And we have the Black Knight's pawn and the Black Bishop's pawn in his gallant habit, richly accoutred, as it is. We'll find out whether the Black... And just for the listeners at home, anyone who's forgotten, the Black Knight's pawn has castrated someone in the past. He's still feeling quite guilty about it. He has chopped someone's googlies off. Whereas the Black Bishop's pawn is someone who should probably have his googlies chopped off. Act 4, Scene 1. Let's dig into it a little bit.
It's he, my confessor. He might have passed me 7 years together had I not by chance advanced mine eye upon that lettered hatband. The Jesuitical symbol to be known by, worn by the bravest brave collegians with consent. 'Tis a strange habit for a holy father, a president of poverty especially. But we, the sons and daughters of obedience, dare not think awry, but must confess ourselves as humbly to the father of that feather, long spared and poniard, as to the alb and altar, and happy were so highly graced to attain to it, holy and reverent.
How hast found me out?
Oh, sir, put on a sparkling trim of glory. Perfection will shine foremost, and I knew you by the Catholic mark you were about you, the mark above your forehead.
Are you grown so ambitious in your observance? Well, your business, I have my game to follow.
I have a worm, follow me so, that I could follow no game. The most faint-hearted pawn, if he could see his play, might snap me up at pleasure, I dare say. To be absolved, my conscience being at ease, I could then with more courage ply my game.
It was a base fact.
Twas a schematic pawn, sir.
What's that to the nobility of revenge? Suffices, have neither will nor power to give you absolution for that violence. Make your petition to the penance chamber. If the tax register relieve you in it, by the black bishop's clemency, you have wrought out a singular piece of favour with your money. That's all your refuge now.
The sting.
We're just going to briefly pause there, just to unpack what's going on there. There's a little bit of a problem with the he recognises the Black Bishop's pawn because of his hat band and the secret signs that they have there to recognise him. Black Bishop's pawn is not very happy about being recognised. And really doesn't want to give him the time of day because he's got his own game to play. Whereas the Black Knight's pawn is still looking for someone to forgive him for doing the terrible thing. He wants to do penance and he's still looking for penance. So that's sort of this ongoing thing with the Black Knight's pawn. It's quite an interesting little ongoing thing. I'm not sure in an audio universe, I think we might have to resort to a narrator just before it starts just to make sure we know who everyone is. Because, of course, we've got character in disguise and nobody's using names. We might just put some names in. Any thoughts about this? Yeah, Liza.
If you want to do an audio play of a Jacobean tragedy where everyone has names, there are tons of those. I think nobody having names is very much a thing with this play.
Yes, I mean, that's precisely why we're doing this exercise, is to try and unpack, you know. The other plays are easy because people not only have names, they use them repeatedly. In fact, almost like a radio script already. Whereas this one is almost unique in being so nameless. We might have to resort to narration. I try to avoid using narration as much as possible. I don't like narration. But maybe we will have to do it. But it's a nice little scene in many ways. It's just a reminder of the Black Knight's little ongoing, almost comic journey, but it also reminds us, you know, gets us the Black Bishop, reintroduces us to the Black Bishop's pawn. Yes, in theory, we've seen him on stage, but he hasn't actually been in the action for an act. He disappeared in Act 3. We haven't seen him since. At the end of Act 2, he went into hiding. So it's important to clearly reintroduce, so we just need to add the name, or at least his designation. Uh, Lovely. Any additional thoughts?
It's nicely woven. Dialogues that flow beautifully. And it's a nicely woven piece. I mean, is the rest of the play as tight as this?
Yeah, broadly, yeah. I mean, it's the dialogue, it's, you know, it's late Middleton's dialogue is very twisty and turny and like this. I mean, as we've found with doing The Sun in Aries, The Lord Mayor's Show, which was only written a few years prior to this. It's the same author and it's the same kind of flow of dialogue. It's just often it's just not quite giving us useful data at times as to what's going on. Liza.
There's an interesting sort of visual thing. And again, for an audio adaptation, this is the sort of thing that might be cut. Because the Black Knight's pawn is wearing the rich garments that we saw him in as appear in the glass in. And the Black Knight's pawn lets it be known that he doesn't look like himself, but he's wearing a hat band with a secret symbol signifying that he's a Jesuit. And that seems like the sort of detail that it would be easy to show on stage, but it... But for an audio production, I don't know, you might cut from, it's he, my confessor, holy and reverend, and...
Well, it's a thing, because the audience need to know that he's still in disguise. Mm. And so in a sense, it does describe what's going on, it's just we need to know that the person he's describing is the Black Bishop's pawn, because of course at no point does he say it's the Black Bishop's pawn.
Yes, I mean, he could say... It's he, my confessor. Tis a strange habit for a holy father, a president of poverty especially. And then cut to holy and reverend? Who knows?
Yes, I think that there might be a few trims in there. It's...
I mean, I love the detail of the secret hat band and would love to keep it. It's just, will it work in an audio thing?
Well, say, I don't, because he's describing it, I don't know that it's inherently a problem of understanding what he's talking about.
It's true. I may be grasping at straws here.
Yeah.
But I also like the Black Knight's pawn talking about his sin as a worm that follows him. It's like... you know, the image of a worm gnawing at you from inside, gnawing your conscience so that you can never be... It's a very, very sort of Jacobean tragedy, death and decay metaphor, which I like a lot.
And it's something you can just hand an actor and say, right, you want to know who your part is? It's this line. This line is what your character is dealing with throughout the whole play. And deals with it in different ways, and it's just the fact that he keeps coming in and keeps trying to get absolved, and basically keeps going to the wrong people to absolve him of his sins because they're all venal and this will return. We've had it earlier. There's another scene to come where it still doesn't go very well for him. Anyway, with that little divertissement, we continue with the White Queen's Pawn, Black Queen's Pawn gambit, as they're going to be setting up. So the Black Bishop pawns his game, as it were. So we'll the Black Knight's pawn exits, the sting shoots deeper, sad, sad, sad face. And we carry on with the Black Bishop's pawn and the entering White Queen and Black Queen's pawns.
Yonder's my game, which, like a politic chess master, I must not seem to see.
Oh, my heart, 'tis he.
That 'tis.
The very selfsame that the magical mirror presented late to me.
And how like a most regardless stranger he walks by, merely ignorant of his fate. You are not minded the principalis part of him. What strange mysteries inscrutable love works by.
The time, you see, is not yet come.
It is in our power now to bring time nearer. Knowledge is a mastery, and make it observe us, and not we it.
I would force nothing from its proper virtue. Let time have his full course. I'd rather die the modest death of undiscovered love than have heaven's least and lowest servant suffer or in his motion receive check for me. How is my soul's growth altered? That single life, the fittest garment that peace ever made for it, is grown too straight, too stubborn on the sudden.
He comes this way again.
Oh, there's a traitor leapt from my heart into my cheek already that will betray all to his powerful eye if it but glance upon me.
By my verity, look, he's passed by again, drowned in neglect, without the prosperous hint of so much happiness to look upon his fortune. How close fate seals up the eye of human understanding, till, like the sun's flower, time and love enclose it. A pity he should dwell in ignorance longer.
What will you do?
Yes, die a bashful death, do, and let the remedy pass by unused still. You're changed enough already, if you look into it. Absolute, sir, with your most noble pardon, for this my rude intrusion, I am bold to bring the knowledge of a secret nearer by many days, sir, than it would arrive in its own proper revelation with you. Pray, turn and fix. Do you know yond noble goodness?
'Tis the first minute mine eye blessed me with her, and clearly shows how much my knowledge wanted, not knowing her till now.
She's to be liked, then? Pray, view advisedly. There is strong reason that I'm so bold to urge it. You must guess the work concerns you nearer than you think for.
The glory and the wonder of this secret puts a reciprocal amazement on me.
'Tis not without worth. You two must be better acquainted.
Is there cause, affinity, or any courteous help creation joys in to bring that forward?
Yes, I can show you the nearest way to that perfection, of a most virtuous one that joy e'er found. Pray, mark her once again, then follow me, and I will show you her must be your wife, sir.
The mystery extends, or else creation have set that admirable piece before us to choose our chaste delights by.
Please you follow, sir.
What art have you to put me on an object and cannot get me off? 'Tis pain to part from it.
If there prove no check in that magical glass now, but my proportion come as fair and full into his eye as his into mine lately, then I'm confirmed. He is mine own forever.
Very self-same that the mirror blessed me with, from head to foot, the beauty and the habit kept you this place still. Did you not remove, lady?
Not a foot further, sir.
Is it possible? I would have sworn I had seen the substance yonder, 'twas to that luster, to that life presented.
Even so was yours to me, sir.
Saw you mine?
Perfectly clear. No sooner my name used, but yours appeared.
Just so did yours at my now.
Why stand you idle? Will you let time cozen you, protracting time, of those delicious benefits that fate hath marked to you? You modest pair of blushing gamesters, and you, sir, the bashfulest. No, I cannot flatter a foul fault in any. Can you be more than man and wife assigned, and by a power the most irrevocable? Others that be adventurers in delight may meet with crosses, shame, or separation. You know the mind of fate. You must be coupled.
She speaks but truth in this. I see no reason that we should miss the relish of this night, but that we are both shamefaced.
Oh, this night, sir. Did not I know you must be mine, and therein your privilege runs strong, for that loose motion you never should be. Is it not my fortune to match with a pure mind? Then am I miserable. The doves and all chaste, loving, winged creatures have their pairs fit, their desires justly mated. Is woman more unfortunate? A virgin, the May of woman. Fate, that hath ordained, sir, we should be man and wife, hath not given warrant for any act of knowledge till we are so.
Tender-eyed modesty, how it grieves at this! I'm as far off for all this strange imposture as at first interview. Well, lies our game now. You know I cannot marry by mine order.
I know you cannot, sir. Yet you may venture upon a contract. Surely you may, sir, without all question, so far without danger or any stain to your vow, and that may take her. Nay, do it with speed, she'll think you mean the better too.
Not so lavish of that blessed spring. You've wasted that upon a cold occasion, now would wash a sinful soul white. By our love joys, the motion shall ne'er light upon my tongue more to were contracted. Then I hope you are mine.
In all just duty, ever.
Then, do you question it? Pish! Then your man and wife, all but church ceremony. Pray, let's see that done first. She shall do reason then. Now I'll enjoy the sport and cousin you both. My blood's game is the wages I have worked for.
So, yes, the Black Queen's pawn is like you can't leave the stage without going, mwah! I have a cunning plan, of which we don't know. Again, you've got a different plan. You're going to cousin both of them, and again, we don't really know why or what's going on. We don't know what's going on inside your head, actually. Even though you talk to the audience, you've not really told us your motivations, really. I mean, it's something interesting about that. You know, in a sense, we know who the White Queen's pawn is. Even if the White Queen's pawn is quite one note throughout. I mean, you know, terribly virtuous, awfully virtuous, continually, never-endingly virtuous throughout. But Black Bishop's pawn is similarly, you know, we know what his motivations are throughout very, very clearly. I think the game here is much, much more straight. Again, it's very straightforward what's going on. Apart from the moment when the Black Bishop's pawn exits to look at the glass and see his own version. I mean, he says he doesn't see anything, of course. But, you know, or the game of him coming back on again. You didn't move, did you? All of that stuff, you know, because I saw you, you know, and he's got to be pretending to be mock. You know, this is the most amazing... story of how we met, ever, you know, God, what, you know, this will keep them going and dinner parties forever. And of course, what we need the audience to be doing throughout the whole thing is going, run away. I mean, that's got to be the point here is that it's got to be this so awful that, you know, that the White Queen's pawn is going with it. And so we need to sort of ramp up that agony, actually. That's where it lives. And, you know, and all those little twists where she's going, oh, no, well, I can't sleep with you. That'd be all, you know, and we can't do that. And the twisted logic that the Black Queen's pawn comes up with at the end to say, no, it's fine. You're as good as married already. You know, it's fine. You don't need any of that stuff. It'll be cool.
You've had the beach wedding. That's enough.
Yeah.
There was a part of that where I felt like it was There's a couple of times where I felt like it was an aside anyway, but there was a time when I felt like it was almost an aside to the Black Queen's pawn, which is the where it starts, where lies our game now. We're sorry, the midway line, part of the way through a line, maybe earlier than that, but I just felt like that bit down to they do it with speed, sir. So they do it with speed. It was almost like a side conversation.
Mm. Yes, I've been sort of looking to see whether there are any meaningful notes of asides. There don't seem to be really that many noted. I mean, that doesn't mean it can't be played as things can't be played as asides.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think "you know I cannot marry by mine order" has to be spoken aloud, because that's a plot point and the White Queen's pawn needs to know that. And then the Black Queen's pawn, presumably this is a little exchange that you agreed to have while you were in the antechamber pretending to look at the mirror. "I know you cannot, sir, yet you may venture upon a contract." And then I would say the Black Queen's pawn probably speaks publicly up to "or any stain to your vow," and then "and that may take her, nay, do it." I don't know if I was directing, and if I was so gauche a director as to give line readings to an actor as accomplished as Lindsay, that's what I might say.
Greg's point is really, really good. That there are so many points where you're going, that could be an aside. That could be an aside. Mm. But it also could be just played to the room, or you know, how good is it? It's a question of how much scripting and how much improv is the Black Bishop's pawn doing here. You know, what was the dress rehearsal like? Who was standing in to read the White Queen's pawn's part? You know, before they got to the actual, you know, these questions. I'm very interested in the connection between this kind of business in plays and modern con films, where this kind of game is going on, and how con artists function. Any other thoughts? No, I muted myself, hoping that someone would leap in. You know, that you'd take the hint that maybe someone would like to come in. But apart from, say, that moment when they exit and then they come back on again, but it is all in the dialogue. Actually, it's all quite clearly done. Even the opening arrival of the White Queen and the Black Queen's pawn. All of that, the dialogue explains who they are and what's going on. It's him. It's the self-same that the magical mirror presented me lately. And it's only seconds since actually we, you know, there's barely been a minute, 2 minutes since you were on stage last. So the audience hasn't forgotten where we are.
Yes. It's strange. She thinks he's someone different. And yet when he says, "well, hey, babe, let's do it tonight," that she instantly gets healthily suspicious that this man's intentions may not be as chaste and pure and marital as hers are.
Yeah, you would have thought some alarm bells are starting to ring at that point, really, really loud. I mean, this is the thing that, again, to a degree, we don't have to worry too much about. But, you know, is that logic of how do these disguises work?
What are we to make of "my blood's game is the wages I have worked for"? Is it simply "my blood's game"? Is that simply an activity I'm going to enjoy? Is she related to the Black Bishop's pawn? Is it?
I doubt it's I think it's the former rather than the latter.
So just blood in the sense of lust or pleasure.
I would have thought so, yeah. So I'm just doing some textual things, or I'm just checking textual things to try and find the textual things. Yes, there's a reason why I can't find the textual things, because it's not in that edition. That's why I can't find it. Ignore me. We're going to jump
that's
ahead.
That's okay, we'll just paper over the cracks.
Yeah, it's fine. So there's a bit of a gap. Some other act stuff happens in act four. We shift focus much more to the Black Knight and the Fat Bishop, and also we're introducing characters suddenly leap forward and start doing things even though they've basically done nothing in the first half of the play. The White Knight and the White Duke, and there's stuff to do with the White Queen, and there's a whole other series of things goes on in the now intervening gap between the scene we've just done and the scene we're going to look at next. So Act 5, Scene 2. Just double checking where we are. Yes, we are going to have a follow-up, as it were, to where we just were. So let's see where this goes. Enter the White Queen's pawn. The Black Bishop's pawn will enter in just a moment.
I see it was but a trial of my duty now. He hath a more modest mind, and in that virtue most worthily hath fate provided for me. 'Tis the bad man in the reverend habit. Dares he be seen again, traitor to holiness? Oh, marble-fronted impudence! And knows how ill he hath used me. I'm ashamed he blushes not.
Are you yet stored with any woman's pity? Are you the mistress of so much devotion, kindness, and charity as to bestow an alms of love on your poor sufferer yet, for your sake only?
Sir, for the reverend respect you ought to give to sanctity, though none to me, in being her servant vowed and wear her livery, if I might counsel, you should never speak the language of unchasteness in that habit. You would not think how ill it doth with you. The world's a stage on which all parts are played. You'd think it most absurd to see a devil presented there not in a devil's shape, or wanting one to send him out in yours. You'd rail at that for an absurdity no college e'er committed. For decorum's sake, then, for pity's cause, for sacred virtue's honour, if you'll persist still in your devil's part, present him as you should do. And let one that carries up the goodness of the play come in that habit, and I'll speak with him. Then will the parts be fitted, and the spectators know which is which. They must have cunning judgments to find it else, for such a one as you is able to deceive a mighty audience, nay, those you have seduced, if there be any within this assembly. When they see what manner you play your game with me, they cannot love you. Is there so little hope of you to smile, sir?
Britain. Yes, to your fears, at the ignorance of your power, the little use you make of time, youth, fortune. No, you have a husband for lust's shelter. You dare not yet make bold with a friend's comfort. This is the plague of weakness.
So hot, burning. The syllables of sin fly from his lips as if the letter came new cast from hell.
Setting by the dish you loathe so much, which hath been heartily tasted by your betters, I come to marry you to the gentleman that last enjoyed you. I hope that pleases you. There's no immodest relish in that office.
Strange. Of all men, he should first light on him to tie that holy knot that sought to undo me. Were you requested to perform that business, sir?
I name you a short token.
As for that, sir, Now you're most welcome. And my fair hopes of you, you'll never break the sacred knot you tie once with any lewd soliciting hereafter.
But all the crafts in getting him in knit. You're all on fire to make your cousining market. I am the marrier and the man. Do you know me? Do you know me, nice iniquity, strict luxury, and holy whoredom, that would clap on marriage with all hot speed to solder up your game? Oh, see what a scourge fate hath provided for thee. You were a maid. Swear still, you're no worse now I left you as I found you. Have I startled you? I'm quit with you now for my discovery, your outcries, and your cunning. Farewell, brokage.
I'm just going to pause there, because there's a bit of information I forgot to give you. quite an important bit of information that helps understanding what the hell's going on. So, in Dumb Show earlier... previously on in the middle of Act 4, there was a dumb show where the Black Bishop's pawn went to go to bed with the White Queen's pawn. However, in the darkness, the White Queen's pawn was sent somewhere else and the Black Queen's pawn went into the same room. So the whole point of this scene, which I apologise for completely bamboozling you with, is that you think you've just deflowered her, as it were, and that you're now here to marry her. And she's going, what the hell are you talking about?
So that was what the Black Queen's pawn meant by my blood's gain. This was a whole thing for her to get her favourite priest into bed.
Yes, but we didn't know that at that point.
So that was why she took the blame for the rape, then? Or the attempted rape?
I don't know, again, whether there's a proper motivation given at all or whether it's just a expediency of that,
it was
that
her,
nature
her,
of that scene.
Her stratagem in order to get him away from the White Queen's pawn and to get him for herself.
Well, he wasn't there. I mean, this is the thing. He's been in hiding. I don't know whether that gambit was necessary, especially as the White Queen's pawn was undergoing penance by the Black House. So surely the Black House would have had access to her anyway. I don't want to suggest horrific crimes here, but they had opportunity to do all sorts of horrible things if they really wanted to.
Here is my thematically appropriate cat, who is black and white.
Yay! Apologies for that total cock-up.
That definitely makes more sense in the scene.
Yeah. Tell you what, shall we do that again?
I might know what the feck I'm going on about now.
Yeah, so you're basically going... And it's important... back onto the actual point of this session is, of course, what we need to do is the question that we need to know is, of course... The audience need to know that the Black Bishop's pawn is appearing as himself. Regardless of the problem of doing a dumb show on audio, which is an entirely separate issue I'm not even going to bother doing an episode on, is in this opening moment, how clear do we make it? Again, it might just be a matter of just saying, you, the Black Bishop's pawn, kind of. Slightly dodgy radio dialogue. But otherwise, once it gets going, it's a question of making sure that we connect the dots. And that might be a question in the edit. Okay, let's take that away again from the beginning of Act 5, Scene 2. So I say... White Queen's pawn, no idea what's going on. Black Bishop's pawn thinks he's had a lovely evening with her.
I see, but 'twas but a trial of my duty now. He hath a more modest mind, and in that virtue most worthily hath fate provided for me. 'Tis the bad man in the reverend habit. Dares he be seen again, traitor to holiness? Oh, marble-fronted impudence, and knows how ill he hath used me. I'm ashamed he blushes not.
Are you yet stored with any woman's pity? Are you the mistress of so much devotion, kindness, and charity as to bestow an arms of love on your poor sufferer yet, for your sake only?
Sir, for the reverend respect you ought to give to sanctity, though none to me, in being her servant vowed and wear her livery. If I might counsel, you should never speak the language of unchasteness in that habit. You would not think how ill it doth with you. The world's a stage on which all parts are played. You would think it most absurd to see a devil presented there not in a devil's shape, or wanting one to send him out in yours. You'd rail at that for an absurdity no college e'er committed. For decorum's sake, then, for pity's cause, for sacred virtue's honor, if you'll persist still in your devil's part, present him as you should do. And let one that carries up the goodness of the play come in that habit, and I'll speak with him. Then will the parts be fitted, and the spectators know which is which. They must have cunning judgments to find it else, for such a one as you is able to deceive a mighty audience. Nay, those you have seduced, if there be any, in the assembly, when they see what manner you play your game with me, they cannot love you. Is there so little hope of you to... Smile, sir.
Yes, to your fears, the ignorance of your power, the little use you make of time, youth, fortune, knowing you have a husband for lust's shelter. You dare not yet make bold with a friend's comfort. This is the plague of weakness.
So hot, burning. The syllables of sin fly from his lips as if the letter came new cast from hell.
Well, setting by the dish you load so much, which hath been heartily tasted by your betters, I come to marry you to the gentleman that last enjoyed you. I hope that pleases you. There's no immodest relish in that office.
Strange. Of all men, he should first light on him to tie that holy knot that sought to undo me. Were you requested to perform that business, sir?
I name you a short token.
As for that, sir, now you're most welcome. And my fair hopes of you, you'll never break the sacred knot you tie once with any lewd soliciting thereafter.
But all the crafts getting of it knit. You're all on fire to make your cousinning market. I am the marrier and the man. Do you know me? Do you know me, nice iniquity, strict luxury and holy whoredom? That will clap on marriage with all hot speed to solder up your game. See what a scourge fate hath provided for thee. You were a maid. Swear still. You're no worse now. I left you as I found you. If I startled you, I'm quit with you now for my discovery, your outcries and your cunning. Farewell, brokerage.
Nay, stay, and hear me but give thanks a little. If your ear can endure a work so gracious, then you may take your pleasure.
And that?
That power that hath preserved me from this devil, this that may challenge the chief chair in hell and sit above his master.
Bring in Merit.
That suffered'st him through blind lust to be led last night to the action of some common bed.
Not over common, neither.
Ha! What voice is that?
Of virgins be thou ever honored. Now you may go. You hear I've given thanks, sir.
It's a strange game. Did not I lie with you?
No.
What the devil art thou?
I will not answer you, sir, after thanksgiving.
I made you promise to me after the contract.
Yes.
Mischief confound thee! I speak not to thee, and you were prepared for it and set your joys more high.
Then you could reach, sir.
This is some bawdy pawn. I'll slit the throat on it.
What? Offer violence to your bedfellow, to one that works so kindly without rape?
My bedfellow?
Do you plant your scorn against me? Go, why? When I was probationer at Brussels, that engine was not known. Then adoration filled up the place, and wonder was in fashion. Is't turned to the wild seed of contempt so soon? Can 5 years stamp a board? Pray, look upon me, sir. I've youth enough to take it. 'Tis no longer since you were chief agent for the transportation of ladies' daughters, if you be remembered. Some of their portions I could name, who pursed them too. They were soon dispossessed of worldly cares that came into your fingers.
I hear her.
Holy derision, yes, till thy ears swell with thine own venom, thy profane life's vomit. Whose niece was she you poisoned with child twice and gave her out possessed with a foul spirit when 'twas indeed your bastard?
I am taken in mine own toils.
At which point enter the White Queen and the White Bishop's pawn.
Yes, and 'tis you just should be.
And thou, lewd pawn, the shame of womanhood.
I'm lost of all hands.
And I cannot feel the weight of my perdition. Now he's taken, t'hath not the burden of a grasshopper.
Thou whore of order, cockatrice in voto.
Enter the Black Knight's pawn.
Yon the White Bishop's pawn. I'll play at hers. At heart now.
How now, black villain? Wouldst thou heap a murder on thy first foul offence? Oh, merciless bloodhound, 'tis time that thou wert taken.
Death prevented.
For thy sake and that partner in thy shame, I'll never know man farther than by name.
And scene ends. Okay, several issues here in terms of clarification, what's going on. So, Black Queen's pawn, you've just explained why you're doing everything. Do you know why you did everything?
Well, it looks as if they've got history in Brussels. It's not crystal clear, but it... was she poisoned by him or no? Or she knows someone who was poisoned by him who was pregnant with his child and it happened twice? Is that two different people or am I completely wrong?
Unless the poisoning is just simply the poison is the fact that he got her pregnant. That it's simply the poison.
Yeah.
The poison is his seed, as it were.
Yeah. Oh, in which case we could lose that comma after poisoned, and that would make it clear for the reader. So.
Yes. There are different punctuation options.
Well, it's possible. I mean, the worst reading would be, a bad reading. Would be that she was with child twice and he twice gave her some kind of abortive fashion.
Yeah.
I mean, that wouldn't be the worst reading. The worst reading is that it's someone else and he poisoned her to death. But...
Yeah. So when she says, they were soon dispossessed of worldly cares that came into your fingers. So he's taking these, do we think they're orphan, sort of highborn orphans? Or I'm not, you know.
Chief agent for the transportation of ladies' daughters.
Yeah. I mean,
I think this is about getting them placed in convents, because
yes, it is. Yeah,
Because it was usual when someone noble was sent to a convent, they would get a slightly easier life than someone who entered the convent in a regular way, but they would have to give what would have been their dowry as a donation to the convent. And the implication is that he kept the dowries and debauched the women rather than putting them in convents.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. But I don't think it's not massively clear if you don't already have that information as a listener.
Mm. Well, you can
be made so.
I guess you can give transportation of ladies' daughters enough emphasis, so even if we don't know the specifics, so it sounds like sex trafficking.
Mm. Absolutely, but if it's a specific crime, that's quite a specific crime.
Yeah, and it's this thing about having got these people pregnant, gave out her possessed with a foul spirit. Like a phantom pregnancy, you know, to say, oh, look, no, they're just swollen up with the devil kind of situation. They're not pregnant by me. No, definitely not.
They're mad. They're mad.
Now, okay, so that's why she doesn't like him. Why?
But she just shagged him.
Yeah,
also.
I'm trying to
like
join the dots.
Like, she went to a great deal of trouble to do that.
Yeah, I'm confused as to why this is happening.
I suppose maybe there's an aspect where he is, wounded by his own dagger in a way. She's using his own medicine against him by luring him into an act that she will then expose him for. I'm not that I'm justifying this, but she didn't do the bed trick out of an act of, out of any feelings of love or wanting to get her rightful place back in his life or anything like that. She's taking revenge. She's using it as revenge.
And he does immediately get taken. It does leave him exposed for the arrival of the White Queen and the White Bishop's pawn, which leads us to this next sort of... there's lots of little problems. Let's go back to the earlier clarity problem, which I think is probably fine. Reasonable sound design will make it clear. But it's the Black Queen's pawn is overhearing everything and is basically doing a no, yes. It's not an echo, but it's that sort of game of just going, it wasn't you, it was someone else. Can't hear you. Kind of thing. How clear that would come across. And then we get this bit at the end with the entrance of the Black Knight's pawn. And I'm not sure what he's doing. Is he trying to finish off the White Bishop's pawn, having taken off his ghoulies earlier? Or is he... Why is he... What's he prevented into... I don't know what's going on.
It reads as if the Black Knight's pawn is sort of saying, well, because I... One way of getting rid of my worm of guilt is if I just kill this person. And the White Queen's pawn quite rightly said, what, you're going to add murder to the list of your crimes? Is that right?
I mean, broadly speaking, I'm sort of looking at this as just going, let's just cut these lines because I don't know what they add. I don't know what's going on. It's a big question. I don't know if that's the last time we see the Black Knight's pawn off the top of my head, so it could be important that he gets taken now. He needs to get taken for reasons. I say this half of the play is full of some really weird stuff. Stuff's happens. And I'm not, and it's explained after it happens. It's again this constant thing that things are explained after they happen, and this is at least the first time when I sort of know what the reason for what's happening is, but it doesn't seem to make sense. So it confuses me. Answers on the postcard if you're listening to this, as to. I'm sure there are reasons. I'm sure you can sit down and work through the logic and you can come up with reasons and you can find things. But I'm looking at a clear reason. I'm looking for a clear motivator that a listener, or if for that matter a viewer, will go, aha, I know what's going on. Because at the moment, I don't see it. I don't see a motivation.
A motivation for the Black Knight's pawn to try and murder the White Queen's pawn, whom he earlier mutilated?
Yeah, because he's been talking about, you know, being... I mean, I still don't even know why he did it in the first place, let alone anything else. But considering he spent the entire time going, I feel so guilty, I feel so guilty, why would he then come in and have asked him now?
Yeah,
unless there's a reason that is in a scene earlier that I've forgotten about, which might be the case. That
or maybe
might be
a reason that's revealed in a scene later.
Huh. I think it's in a scene earlier because we don't really have a later. There might be a scene that we're looking at next week that might explain why he now does what he does. So this might be a fake problem that doesn't exist. We still don't really have a particularly good reason why the Black Queen's pawn is doing what she's doing. There's a second problem with the Black Queen's pawn reason for what she's doing. Is it doesn't explain why she does what she does, but it's also really opaque. Lindsay said earlier, I mean, it's just, it's not very clearly explicated. It's so poetic-y that actually I don't really know what she's saying. This subplot confuses me. Any additional thoughts on this scene? So, yes, very much open for the listener at home. Do you have any thoughts about this scene or what's going on here? Specifically with the Black Queen's pawn, because I think we resolve, actually, by doing the play in a fully chronological fashion, we actually resolve the other issue that I've just brought up. There are some issues with the black bishop's black queen's pawn sort of hiding in the background going, but I'm sure they'll resolve themselves. Now, the White Queen's pawn is in the final scene. The final scene features all the various naughty pieces being put in the bag. I could be wrong, but I don't think the White Queen's pawn says a damn thing. I think they refer to her in passing, but I don't think she actually says anything.
So, in a way, that's kind of good. In a no news is good news, you don't get forcibly married or jailed or murdered or otherwise have a Jacobean tragedy sort of fate handed to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's something we'll discover when we look at the scene overall, but the reason why we're not doing anything with it now is just simply to say she doesn't. I don't think she says anything at all. However, she does get the last word. The epilogue is by the White Queen's pawn. So, as we have a few minutes left, we can close off with the epilogue.
My mistress, the White Queen, hath sent me forth and bade me bow to thus low, to all of worth, that are true friends of the White House and cause, which she hopes most of this assembly draws. For any else, by envy's mark denoted, to those night glow-worms in the bag devoted, where'er they sit, or stand, or in private lurk, they'll be soon known by their depraving work. But she's assured what they'll commit to bane, her white friend's hands will build up fair again.
Oh, that's nice. So presumably in the previous scene that she's basically been standing with the White Queen and who's gone through a similar traumatic experience as the White Queen's pawn has as well in the intervening scenes, that there might be something interesting. That's quite nice. Nice little speech. Like it. There's that sort of closes everything off in a nice way. Happy with that. So to close off, final thoughts about this. Now, we've been mostly talking about adaptation in the process of just going, how do we clarify? How do we make it clear what's going on? How do we, by and large, not try to change the play in terms of putting it on? Today, we've hit an area where I'm going to raise the spectre of adaptation for adjusting the plot's sake. Because there is a question in my mind whether it's possible to tweak the plot of the Black Queen's pawn. So that rather than there's a bed trick thing going on, that it's more that he is caught attempting to enter the chamber and there is this confusion between them. We would lose a really nice scene. But that we almost rush to him being taken and being unmasked as an evil, evil man by coming out. Because the simple thing is he needs to get taken by a white piece. He has been in hiding or in disguise. This is the first time he's appeared as himself. And so all he needs to do is come out onto the stage and then get taken. And that could be the setup that the Black Queen's pawn has been trying to do, and she can still talk about how much she hates him and his awfulness, but she can also tell that to the Queen, which she doesn't do, and she can almost hand him over, and you could almost defect, because this is also the last we hear from the Black Black Queen's pawn as well. I don't think she says anything in the final scene either. So I'm wondering if there is just a tweak here. We might lose some nice material, but we might have something that sort of makes more sense. I don't normally suggest changing things in an active way like this, but I don't know if the material will stand the twisting and cutting and occasional sort of sub-Middleton-ness being put in. But I'm raising that spectre. I'm asking the question, you know, is this subplot fit for purpose? Actually, even in a stage play, I find it very confusing. It's the part of the play that I have issue with. Beyond, you know, the issue of just some of it's really horrible. But that's a separate problem. So, yeah, final thoughts in the room, address that or any other things or any other thoughts. You can just throw in thoughts about the characters, about what's going on. Do we feel we've got into the head of the White Queen's pawn or the Black Bishop's pawn or the Black Queen's pawn? Are we feeling the interiority with what's going on here? Lindsay, you weigh first, so I'll go to you for final thoughts.
Yes, just sort of not really a sum up, but just to reply to your question about could this be cut, could this plot strand be altered. I'm not sure about that, just because I still don't really have a sense of it as a whole. I think it would be possible to clarify what the Black Queen's pawn says about Brussels and about all of that. And there is something, I like this sort of revenge plot, really, particularly because it's a sexual, political one. I like it. So I think it might be possible to slightly rewrite one or two sections judiciously so that it's very clear that she's talking about herself. And that might help with the problem, I don't know. But that would be my thought from today's session.
Mm. And it's also a question of, do we reveal to the audience earlier what she's got in mind? You know, or that she is, you know, an antagonist to the Black Bishop's pawn. The fact that it's kept until the, you know, almost her last lines of dialogue. It's almost like she needs to now just go on a killing spree moment, you know, just, you know, shoot him in the head. And there's something slightly crazed about this moment of the way all this works.
I not having been reading for it, but the Black Queen's pawn, like she says, she gives some of her lines before the bed trick and before the revelation. Some of her lines give some indication that she wants to get the Black Bishop's pawn into bed, or she wants to deceive him and cozen him in some way. But from what she says anyway, I don't get the kind of long-term resentment and desire for revenge that she shows in the last scene. I don't know, do you, Lindsay? You are the expert here. You were the Black Queen's pawn.
Well, but only tonight, so I can't really put it together yet with what else has happened. You know, it's been very... it's just been this concentrated bit, so I don't know. I mean, it's really interesting doing the text like this with just taking certain scenes and looking at how they work, as opposed to, you know, having the whole of it and kind of going, what was that then? So I don't know is the answer.
It's a valid answer at this point. We're not necessarily here for answers. We're still hunting for all the right questions. There will come a time when we're made to make decisions, but the decisions are not necessarily answers. Tom, do you have any final thoughts?
Yeah, I think that it's a bit like a Agatha Christie. You need all the backstory. You need, and I think that reveal of his, you know, this thing of being in a position of privilege and abusing his guardian, people he's guardian to. Unfortunately, you get it a lot nowadays with sports coaches and things like that. But in those days, so yeah, the backstories are very, very colourful and very filthy but interesting because of that.
Lindsay, did you want to leap in on that point, or were you just, your hand was just moving? Involuntary spasm.
The fickle finger of fate wrote, and having writ moved on, or something like that.
Right. Greg, any final thoughts? Having played the Greg, any final thoughts on the being the Black Bishop's pawn? I don't know if you've been him before, or you've been various evil people. You tend to only be playing the evil people.
He was very interesting, but I'd want to see if there is anything else in this for him, because
no, that's it as well. I don't think he says anymore.
He's a great character, but there's so little, but so much. It's an interest. I really liked. And one final thought. I love that White Queen's speech about theatre and audience. Such a glorious speech. But yes, no. Yeah. No. Good fun. Not as fun as the Fat Bishop last week. Sorry.
Well, we will have another session looking at the latter end of the Fat Bishop, as it were. Yes, I think you may get an additional line or two in the bag at the end of the play. But otherwise, character-wise, this is it. This is the denouement for this plotline. And as a denouement for this plotline, which is the central plotline to a degree, or one of the branches of the central plot, it's also that question of, does it land as a sort of ending for this particular thing? We get the sort of everyone in the bag ending at the very end, which gives us a sort of climax. But as I say, the White Queen's pawn sort of fades away at the very end.
Well, she says she's not going to speak to him. And then she basically shuts up until the Black Knight's pawn comes in and tries to murder someone.
Yeah. So, on that note, It's time to close this session. It's a continuing process of trying to figure out straightforward minor structural issues that are to tweak, and then the bigger issues which lead to the questions that normally we don't ask. Normally we try to leave things well alone, but this play is fighting us. And also, if you're interested in us doing future sessions similar to this, what other plays out there really, really demand this level of pulling apart? Not just to not to say I'm interested in this character or this speech, but just going, how do we do this thing? Because it's doing stuff, and you know, how does one do that? So if you have any interesting thoughts or you want to have any feedback on this, get in touch, admin@beyondshakespeare.com. You can always follow us on Twitter @BeyondShakes. And if you're interested in us and helping us produce any future things, you can always support us on Patreon at patreon.com/BeyondShakespeare. Or you can even buy us a coffee at ko-fi.com/BeyondShakespeare. All that money goes into helping produce future productions, of which this will at some point be one of them. All that remains to thank all the wonderful readers for all their wonderful reading. Thank you very much, and goodbye. The burden of a grasshopper.